This is Yes Presents Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm Sonali Kolhatkar, Senior Editor at Yes Media. You can find this program at yesmagazine.org, watch it on Free Speech TV, and listen to it on community and independent radio stations nationwide. A police reform initiative in Washington state to hold law enforcement accountable is facing a test of its effectiveness. Initiative 940, the first of its kind in the nation, strips police of so-called qualified immunity, protecting them from prosecution. In 2018, Washington state's voters passed the initiative after members of the Puyallup tribe mobilized in the wake of the police killing of a young indigenous woman named Jacqueline Salyers. 2 years later, when police killed a black man named Manuel Ellis, just weeks before George Floyd's similar police murder in Minnesota, Initiative 940 was put to the test. Writing in Yes Magazine about how the initiative was passed is my guest, Frank Hopper, Tlingit and freelance native journalist, born in Juneau, Alaska, now living in Tacoma, Washington. He's written a story for Yes Magazine about this particular initiative. Welcome to the program, Frank.
Thank you, Sonali.
So first, let's talk about Jacqueline Salyers, the young Indigenous woman. She was from the Puyallup tribe, whose police killing prompted her family, her community, to, first of all, realize that police were protected from prosecution and then actually do something about it. What did they do when she was killed?
Well, the family of Jackie are active in that Puyallup tribe. And they had no idea what to do. But the Puyallup tribe has a history of activism going back into the 1960s, where the tribe fought the state of Washington for fishing rights. They fought the federal government for their support of a puppet tribal government. And when at the standoff at Wounded Knee, they were part of the takeover of Fort Lawton. And so there was a history of activism that the family drew upon. They went to one of their elders named Ramona Bennett, who's now 85 years old, and they told her what had happened, and they asked her what they should do, and she told them that the way to get things done is to get publicity, to get help from other groups, to join other groups for support, and to generate support within the community. And so she suggested they have a march. And so they organized a march from the tribal administration building on the reservation to the federal courthouse in Tacoma. What they found out was a lot of people joined them who were families of other police shooting victims. And they had no idea that there were so many out there that had been affected by police shootings. So they started to have meetings at the tribe's youth center every week. The elders of the tribe and the families of other shooting victims got together at these meetings, and they shared what happened to them, and they talked about what they could do. And one of the people that showed up was a Native American man named Rick Williams, and his brother, John T. Williams, had been shot by Seattle police in 2010. And it was such an egregious shooting. They started looking into the laws that allowed the police to get away with it. Because in Washington state, there was a law passed in the 1980s, in 1986, I think it was, that said that police could not be prosecuted for killing a suspect if they were acting in good faith and without malice. And those are two things that you can't really prove in a court of law. You can't really prove that someone in the midst of a conflict or a confrontation with suspects, you can't really prove that the police are acting in good faith. I mean, what does that mean? And they can't really prove that the police officer was acting with malice, which means with evil intent. And so as a result, no prosecutors would prosecute any police that were involved in the use of deadly force because it was just impossible for them to win. And this is sort of what came to light when John T. Williams was shot. And so his brother began campaigning to change the law. And there was a police reform advocate named Lisa Hayes who helped write an early version of I-940. And it was called Initiative 873. They worked hard to get it put on the ballot. They were out collecting signatures and all that kind of stuff, but they didn't get enough to get the their initiative put on the ballot. And so when the community meeting started at the Puyallup Youth Center, Rick Williams showed up just to sort of be a part of it and to, you know, see if he could help. And he already had this initiative written, the early one that didn't make it onto the ballot. And so so the Puyallup tribe pitched in, and they went out and gathered signatures, and, you know, they stood in front of the grocery stores and things like that. They hired a company to collect signatures, and they went around to all the different tribes in Washington state and explained what they were trying to do, asked for donations to help. And so every single federally recognized tribe in Washington state contributed. Also, several corporate sponsors contributed, like Microsoft actually contributed to help get publicity for the campaign and to help get signatures. And they wound up collecting, I think it was 360,000 signatures. And so this new initiative, Initiative 940, was put on the was voted on in 2018, and it was voted into law by about 2/3 of the Washington state voters. And so now the requirement to charge police with murder was changed. They took off the malice requirement and the good faith requirement, and so now police in Washington state can be prosecuted for murder if their use of deadly force was unnecessary.
So the Puyallup tribe really mobilized other indigenous communities, and I imagine non-indigenous voters as well, to put this on the ballot and to pass it. And then, as I mentioned, Manuel Ellis was killed by police. He was a young black man. What happened at that point? First of all, what happened to Manny Ellis, and how did the stripping away of qualified immunity play out for the police officers involved in killing him?
Well, Manny Ellis was a 33-year-old black man who was just returning from a convenience store one night, and he was kind of being rowdy. I guess some people had called in to complain about him, and so they sent the police out. Even though he had no history of violence and he wasn't carrying a weapon, he was just being outraged at the way the police were treating him, because since he was a black man, they felt that they could get away with roughly handling him, and he just had enough. And so he kind of physically resisted being arrested. And so the police, and there were three of them that were eventually charged with his death. And what they did was they tried to restrain him, and they put him down on the ground, face down on the ground. They put a bag over his head, which I guess is like to prevent him from spitting, you know. And then one of the officers kneeled down on his back, actually on the back of his neck, and did not let him get up, even though he was telling them that he couldn't breathe. And they held him like that for quite a long time. He finally died. And the police at that time were really rough with him. I mean, they were telling him to shut the F up, and, you know, as they were basically strangling him. And he died. And it was all because he was being a little rowdy on his way home from the grocery store, or from a 7-Eleven, I guess it was. So there was a lot of outrage in the community, and there were a lot of meetings that were held, and the police were finally prosecuted. Two of the officers were charged with second-degree murder and manslaughter, and then the third officer was charged with manslaughter. And so there was a trial in Tacoma for these charges. There was finally a decision made.
If Initiative 940 hadn't been passed by voters in 2018, by the time Manuel Ellis was killed, would these cops have even been charged?
No, they wouldn't have been charged. And so any investigation relating to the case wouldn't have been made public. It would have been very difficult to get copies of the transcripts or the charging documents, or the being able to put them actually on trial allowed all of the investigations, things like that, to be made public, to become public documents. That was one step in the right direction. It kind of took the investigation out of the dark. The problem was, though, the mostly white jury acquitted the three officers, and so to the people in Tacoma, I mean, in at the Puyallup tribe, when they found out, they were pretty depressed about it because they had gone through years and years of trying to change the law, and they finally did, and then it didn't seem to help. The thing is, they recognize that you can't legislate the way people feel inside their hearts, and because of white privilege, most of the jurors, I think there was like nine jurors that were white and two that were black and one that was Asian. The thought is that they had no experience with police racism, and so they automatically assumed that whatever the police did was right, and so that's kind of the prevailing opinion about why they were acquitted, and so it's like the Initiative 940 kind of was a step in the right direction, because it made it possible to charge and try officers for misuse of deadly force. But the next step is to make changes within the community that help the public to see the police as more than just people that are out there kind of protecting us and taking care of us, because they're not really. They're just people. I think that the years and years of white privilege has allowed the verdict to happen, and that's something that's going to take a long time to change. Incidents like this, bring more publicity to the situation and help people to see that the police are just people, and some of them are bad, and some of them are capable of murder.
I'm wondering, Frank, if you think that the sort of abolitionist approach to what transpired in Washington State with Initiative 940 would have seen this initiative as a reform to a system that really has been a white supremacist system that intends, that is working as intended, not, and not that police killings are an exception or that police acquittal when they kill is an exception, but this is how the system was built, and the tweaking it and making these tiny reforms doesn't necessarily work because, in the end, the system will continue to protect the perpetrators, the armed perpetrators of harm.
Yeah, that's the concern of the people at the Puyallup tribe and the family of Manny Ellis and all the people that helped to pass the law. They're quite despondent when they found out about it, about the verdict. But as time has gone by, people have recognized that there's more to 940 than just taking off the malice requirement, because 940 also included things to specify that an investigation should occur that are outside the police department. There are several other things that were included in that, and it was actually quite difficult for the people that wrote the initiative to get it passed, because their main opponent was police unions, and so the police, they have this very strong union that no politician wants to go against, and if they're against, a certain thing, that they're going to get their way, and so really, I think what happened was the public has now a better opportunity to see what it's really like dealing with police violence and unjustified use of deadly force. As they were meeting at the Puyallup Youth Center, and they had no idea that there were so many other families that have been affected by this, and they all came together to write this law and to get it passed. That alone, I think, tells people that there's a lot more unjustified police violence out there than gets put in the news, and that it's much more common than people think. And it's not just a few rogue people or rogue officers. It's a trend, I think, or an aspect of police culture to kind of put the lives of minority people on a lower level than white people, or non people of color, and that alone, I think, is going to help open people's eyes.
Well, Frank, I want to thank you so much for joining us. We'll post a link to your story in Yes Magazine. It's called How the Puyallup Tribe Increased Police Accountability in Washington. Good luck to you, and I'm sure we'll have you back on the next time you write about these issues.
Okay, great. Yeah, thank you very much.
My guest has been Frank Hopper, Tlingit and freelance native journalist born in Juneau, Alaska, now living in Tacoma, Washington, and a contributor for Yes Magazine. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar, senior editor at Yes Media and host of Yes Presents Rising Up with Sonali. You can find this program at yesmagazine.org, watch it on Free Speech TV, and listen to it on community and independent radio stations nationwide. Our audio podcast is on iTunes and Spotify.